This is HPR episode 2835 entitled HPR NYE Show 2018-2019 Part 2. It is hosted by Honky Magoo and is about 151 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, the HPR community comes together to say Happy New Year and chat.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
I was about to say hello, Claudio, but I guess you moved out.
Yeah, I got to step away for a bit because I got to go do this work. So it was good talking to you guys. Hopefully, I'll see you in a little bit.
Okay, take it easy. I'm going to be on and off through the day probably.
Yeah, me too. I stepped away and then you guys started talking about Brexit. I thought, you know, I would jump in on that. But, you know, I still need to do breakfast and whatever.
Is there anybody else going to be on? This is Mongo. Is anybody else going to be on right now?
Well, Dan can tell you that, Claudio's back. Around 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, all the Tilts guys were going to jump in. Hello, Claudio.
Claudio may be having problems setting it up like I did. Go for it.
Hey, everybody, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Not blowing anyone's ears out?
No, not at all. You know, everybody had me move mine to 100%, so, which, you know, usually is way too much, new provider, so we'll, you know, I guess I was low all morning.
Well, I have it at 70%. I figured, let me just turn it down just in case, because I remember the first time I tried this. And oh boy, did I blow everyone's ears out! But I had a much different phone right now. Last year I had my Nexus 4, which did okay. And this year, I'm ending it off with a OnePlus 6T.
Well, it's always an experiment to get the sweet spot.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I figured, let me start low. If my voice is too low, at least that, you know, it's better that way than blowing everyone's ears out.
Yeah, well, it looks like it's working out for you.
Sweet, sweet. So how's the weather over where you all are?
Well, Kansas has been really mild. I mean, I'm kind of afraid because you have a mild winter and then the wheat gets ahead of itself and then it gets froze out in the spring.
Well, I don't know anything about that freezing stuff. I'm in South Texas and it doesn't really much freeze here. Right now, it's drizzly rain, and I've been doing that for a couple of days, which is normal winter, and it's, oh my goodness, it's 48 degrees. It's actually quite cold.
Yeah, I'm here in Miami, so if there's a nice breeze blowing, it's like a partly cloudy day, I guess. I'm sitting outside. Let's just say it's really nice to sit out here and you know, have a nice cup of coffee, which I should be making right now, but I figured, I just found out, I was on Mastodon, well, I'm on Mastodon now, but who was it, Cobra 2, had mentioned that the stream was already on. This was maybe about 15, 20 minutes ago, and I was like, oh, I better jump on quick.
I think it's been on for about 4 hours.
Well, for some reason, I thought it was going to be later. I don't know. This whole, especially at this hour, just getting up a little bit ago, you know, trying to convert UTC and all that. I'm not in the mood. I know it's only 5 hour difference, but still.
Well, the thing is, they started up when it becomes New Year's Day on the International Dateline, which is like out in the middle of the Pacific somewhere around, I don't know, Micronesia or Easter Island or something, and then heads west around the world. So that's not that far from us in that direction. So that's a long ways from GMT or whatever they call it.
Well, so far I've been on since almost been getting the beginning, and yeah, we've had a discussion going the whole time so far. I'm not gonna say it's gonna, you know, this is the first time in a couple years that it has been on a work day. I'm not gonna say there won't be any, you know, silences or what, or yeah, whatever, but a few of us jumped in early and kept it going pretty good.
Oh, that's good to hear. And I was up until maybe about 2 a.m. Just messing around with a NetBSD VM that I had. I hadn't touched in a while, so I was like, I figured I'd fire it up, just kind of play around with that before getting some shut-eye. I woke up about 20 minutes ago, so right now it's my stomach's asking me for coffee. But it's going to have to wait just a little bit. And I figured it is a work day. It is, we're talking a Monday here. So a lot of people surely are at work. Like you said, it's going to be a lot of silence, so maybe it won't be as long. I mean, I'm sure it'll be long, but maybe it won't be as long as the last year.
I think a lot of people probably work short days on New Year's Eve. A lot of people take off New Year's Eve, especially New Year's Day being Tuesday. They're going to get off tomorrow, so they'll just blow off Monday. If their company doesn't give it to them, they'll take a vacation day or something. My wife said that almost nobody will be at her job, so she may take off around noon, 1 o'clock.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all. Right now, I barely hear any traffic right now because where I'm at, it's right near a main street here. So I barely hear cars going by. Usually, it's this loud rumbling noise of cars just driving back and forth. So,
well, I'm too old to work, so I'm at home.
No, I've been at home for the past week. We've had since I work for our school district here. We have a winter recess, so it's pretty much 2 weeks off. So I start back on Monday.
Do you get all the school holidays?
Well, I'm a full-time, roughly 12-month employee. So yeah, we don't do the summers because that's really when we do most of our stuff. Since I work for the IT department, that's when we do most of our big projects.
I've got a friend that does that for a college and does IT for a college, and or he did. I think he's doing it for. He's changed what he does. He does it at a level that doesn't involve students. But when he was doing the student thing, it was always cycled in. He was full time employee, but it was, you know, the rush to get everything ready and blow away a couple hundred lab machines and reset, you know, rebuild them and make sure everything was cleaned up at the end of the semester, getting rid of old accounts and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of work to do on a specific cycle and then keep everything working, during this sessions.
Correct. Yeah. For us, it's usually the summer break. That's when we've got tons of projects going on and internal projects for us at the schools that we maintain, along with district projects that we have for district devices, and it gets pretty busy. And on top of that, doing all of that with custodians cleaning and everything, which is an issue that we have, where the custodians have to disconnect the equipment in order to clean properly. So, like towards the last few weeks, we're usually just plugging everything back in. So, and that's the easiest part of everything. Unless they really, you know, unless you get someone that actually unplugs absolutely everything, like even the monitor cables and everything, that's where it gets a little problematic. But so far, that's been few and far in between. So, but yeah, with those, once we have those last 2 weeks, it's pretty much that. But before that, it's all, you know, redoing all the district machines, redoing all our, the inside school desktops and laptops if they have any. So it's quite busy. So we have, you know, we have tools that we use for that, obviously, as I'm sure he does. But it is our most busiest time is the summertime when everybody's gone. During the main school year, we're just maintaining everything and just making sure everything's good for any kind of computer-based testing.
Yeah, Claudio, You know, I always had the same problem when I worked for school districts, is you would come back in the fall and every computer would be sitting out in the hallway, and I'd be like, really? What is that actually necessary?
I mean, to some degree, I guess it is, and to some degree it isn't. But, you know, I understand they've got the deadlines they got to meet, and they, you know, they have things they got to do just like we do. So I work with them. They work with me. So we kind of got a good relationship going, and we try and coordinate things together so we got everything good to go before the school year starts.
The one thing was, you know, every teacher wanted to pick out her corner of the classroom, and there were corners of the classroom that were wired up for Ethernet and for power and whatever, and the teacher invariably was saying, yeah, I want to do that opposite corner.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Oh, my goodness. The minute you mentioned that, my reaction was I almost flipped the table out here. Oh, no, I've had, just to give you an example, I actually had one teacher want to put her computer in almost the center of the room. I'm like, well, good luck doing that, because there's no way we're going to be running any cable across the room that way. So you're going to have to pick the corner that has all the drops.
You just got a cold heart.
No, it's just years of experience, I guess. Yeah, I guess so. The years of experience has kind of hardened my heart a bit. Just calling me the bastard operator from hell, I guess.
That teacher liked the theater in the round scenario.
Well, I do have to say, as much as they drive me crazy, you know, they're all good. I love them. It's kind of like a parent with their kids. They'll drive you crazy, but you still love them.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of those rubber covers. You run across the room and put a power cable and Ethernet cable in.
Are you cracking up for me, or are you cracking up for everybody?
Everybody.
Yeah, I'm hearing him cracking up too.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, it was fine earlier on, but your ISP must have heard you praising them and decided to lower your bandwidth or something.
Is that Ken Fallon?
It is indeed. I'm back from shopping. How are you, Claudia?
I'm good. Enjoying, what looked like a nice day, and all of a sudden got really cloudy. So it might look like some rain here.
Just come back from doing some shopping, and yeah, it's nice out.
Yeah, I just woke up about half an hour ago. I was talking to the fellas here, so I found out from Cobra 2 that the recording was already on, and they're telling me that, yeah, it's been on for a while.
Yeah, Fast.com is telling me, Fast.com tells me I'm getting 3.2 down. That would be enough for Bumble.
Yeah, something's going on because you were jumbled there.
Sorry about that. I got a little too comfortable and walked away a little too far from the Wi-Fi signal.
Let me stop my download and rejoin. See if that does any good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent.
So what have you been up to this year?
Me, just trying to keep my head together. just kind of mess around with different little mini projects. And I guess kind of getting things ready for next year when we all get prepared for computer-based testing at work.
You or the kids?
Well, kind of both, because I got to make sure everything's ready to go, and the kids, because they need to take it. But yeah, it's pretty much that. I guess that explains. That's why they give us the two weeks off. So because I'm on room to recess right now. So, and I start back up. I've been off last week. And I start up on Monday.
Yeah, okay. My wife's in teaching now, so it's handy to have the time off, but then you're kind of stuck with the school holidays.
Yeah. The nice thing about us is that we kind of follow along with that, except for the summers, which I was explaining earlier, that usually that's when we do most of our work.
Cool.
I might consider working if I could work just in the summers.
That might be a possibility. Might be just a matter of looking around, or you know, probably like a part-time kind of assistance even during the year.
Just kidding. I'm not going to work.
Oh, well, all right then.
I quit and rejoined. Is that any better at all?
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, you sound good.
I'll have to remember to do that every few hours.
50, what kind of connection are you using?
I'm actually on a brand new ISP called BlazingHog.com.
They giving you better speeds than before? Because I know that was an issue for you in your area.
Slightly better, but not what they promised. They're supposed to be like 23 megabits down, so I think I'll... It's on a 4G network cellular connection. So my neighbors they got on and they had invest in better antennas from Amazon. So it looks like that's what I'm going to have to do.
Yeah, usually I mean the was it like a hotspot, correct?
Exactly. I was hoping since I know that I have a wireless tower less than a mile south of me, I was hoping I wouldn't have to have any augmentation.
Yeah. Well, I figure maybe there's some environmental issues causing that as well. I figure the whatever effects isn't that much different from, you know, wireless LAN connection. You know, there's always environmental issues that cause interference.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I have to say, for the most part, because I have, like for my phone, I have unlimited, and I'll usually set it as a hotspot. And it haven't gotten throttled or anything, so I'm paying the actual unlimited. And I've connected my laptop a couple of times before I actually got Comcast here. And I have to say, I was pretty impressed. I mean, obviously, I wasn't going to expect Comcast speeds or, you know, actual, like, you know, home ISP speeds, but you know, it's not too bad. It actually does the job.
Well, this is supposed to be AT&T Unlimited.
Gotcha. Well, again, it could be just environmental issues that maybe an antenna will resolve most of them.
Yeah, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. That's one of the task for today is call them up and say, okay, yeah, it's not doing what you promised. Okay, what do I need to buy?
Right. Well, good morning, Kay Wisher. I see that you were greeting us all through the chat room.
Hey, Kevin.
And you're a commie.
All right, well, fellas, I'm going to drop off for a bit so I can get some breakfast.
Nice to chat. See you next year.
Well, I'll be back before then, unless it's next year for some other time zone.
Probably be off doing family stuff, so.
All right, well, if I don't catch any of you, have a happy, happy new year.
Same to you.
Well, hanging out, I'm already having a happy new year, so. You know, people ask me, why you go online instead of hanging out at parties? Well, I'm not getting invited to too many parties, but even so, you know, I'm hanging out where my friends are.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I like the New Year show, being able to chat with people.
Well, less and less, you know, you talk to people who are not text, you know, and they understand. A lot of people that are my friends I've not actually met in physical life.
Yeah, I know the feeling. And possibly may never meet them due to them being on the other side of the planet, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you were talking about earlier, you know, going to historical sites, and it's like, yeah, on your side of the planet, there's a lot more history to go, and, you know, I do follow some people on YouTube who will go to a lot of places in the U.S., but one guy who has met someone who has the juice, yeah, a couple times a year, you know, come over to Europe and look at stuff, but you know, I am completely waiting for beaming technology where I can just walk through and be over there.
Yeah, that would be handy, wouldn't it? And the social change that would bring, just being able to do something like that.
Well, that's brings up the thing. If you have a problem with the Star Trek idea where it creates a new you at the other part, but it kills the one in the transporter on the starting end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very scary if you think about it too much.
I don't know why I never thought about that. I'm not a philosopher. That's the reason I never thought about that when I was a kid watching those Star Trek things. But now people talk about those things, I say, man, that's creepy.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of the story of Asimov, but there was exactly like that. It was like kind of video game thing that they kept killing the duplicates.
Is that like
unless they did some... Go ahead. You probably know what it is.
No, you're Xyloning again.
Sorry.
No, just saying. Stop torrenting.
I'm not running anything to mumble right now.
I have no idea what it is. It was fine all morning. Did your neighbors start waking up or something?
Could be. Let me jump off and restart again.
Hey, Ken, I was thinking that since you're on all the time and you have all these, he's saying friends everywhere in the world that you've never met. When you do travel, if you announce it ahead of time, you probably don't buy beer at all when you go somewhere, do you?
I'm not that famous. Yes, I buy my own beer. No, I haven't been. I haven't been to the States since I kind of got into podcasting. So I used to be over very regularly every 3 months for a few weeks, and now not so much.
What did you come over here for back then?
I was infrastructure manager for managed the IT for a multinational all across Europe, and then when we had basically the same size of teams in the US and in Ireland, so we used to go over and coordinate every few months.
That's pretty cool because you work, somebody else pays for your international travel, and you get to see cool places, and then you meet the people you talk to on the phone every day.
Yeah, it's excellent. It was excellent. And the fact was not lost to me at the time either.
I work for a NASA contractor in here in Houston, and travel to Florida on a regular basis. So, I mean, that was the extent of my company financed travel, except for maybe an occasional class or something.
That was always nice. And then I used to do probably every month a trip around Europe, go to each of the offices in turn from, you know, UK up to Helsinki to Nancy in Paris, or outside in France, fly into Paris and then drive over to Nancy and then down to fly to Milan and different places. Even got to South Africa once.
Nice. My car was built in South Africa for some reason.
Cool.
I said my car was built in South Africa.
Yeah, it's a small world, isn't it? Very nice country.
It's definitely a global economy.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
Do I sound any better now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm still recording, but don't like it.
I don't know what it is. Continue on because there's obviously nothing you can do. It's just your connection.
Well, don't trust my audio.
You definitely sound better than you did, 51.
Well, a few minutes ago, Kay Wisher reminded me on IRC to remind everybody to keep using the Etherpad for show notes.
Yeah, good point. I was filling them up this morning. But as soon as someone says something interesting, I'll fill it in.
Who'd have thought we'd have anything interesting to say, Ken?
Hey, Ken, while you were gone, man, there was a lot of really, really interesting stuff going on.
I look forward to reading it in the show notes. I'll take down the tone of any conversation, don't you worry.
Where do we find the show notes?
Go to the main HBR site and you'll see that there's a link there to the Etherpad.
Okay, I'll have a look.
Did anyone get a Pine Book?
No, I've not got one, but I'd like to see one in the flesh.
I ordered one.
Pine Book is really popular.
I ordered one. Cost me $199, $49 shipping. And then when it arrived, I had a tax bill of €25, surcharge fee of €15, and €5 tax on the surcharge fee. So it ended up being more expensive than if I bought a Intel Chromebook kind of netbooky type thing and put Linux on it.
Yeah, if you look at it and you start adding every single option like I did, it runs up pretty fast. But and the system I'm on right now was my alternate. If you went out on eBay, you know, what would you get for the same price? And for less than $100, I got a you know, Core 2 Duo. Well, I guess it's not because it's AMD, but the equivalent. But that's, you know, 17-inch, that's what I'm using now. But I do like the Pinebook. I wish maybe they told me a year ago there would be internal upgrades to the Rockbox processor. We haven't seen that yet.
How do you find the keyboard?
Keyboard's not bad. The speakers and the track bar are the weak points.
Do you not have that small shift key on the right hand side?
I'll look, but I mean, like I said, I haven't had that much trouble with the keyboard, but the speakers are not fit for purpose. I think everybody will agree on that.
The keyboard is definitely not fit for purpose. It is terrible.
Oh, I wouldn't say terrible, but I mean, compared to everything else, the trackpad and the speakers, you know, those are not useful.
I mean, I don't like to slag it off because it's nice what they're doing and all, but it just left a sour taste in my mouth after I put, you know, again, you try to give money to an open source project and it ends up just costing you more.
Well, I don't mind it to carry around, throw in my suitcase when I'm traveling. It's not something I would want to use as my everyday system.
I think that's the problem with a lot of these laptop iterations of single board computers. You know, you can get a lot more superior power and stuff like that just by buying a, you know, 2 or 3 year old laptop from some kind of refurbishing company.
Yeah, I had to jump on when I heard Pinebook. I almost bit the bullet on it. I was thinking about doing that as kind of like a birthday Christmas present. Then I said to myself, you know, I could probably just save up just a little more and get myself a used ThinkPad and probably get more use out of it. But it's still, the Pinebook intrigues me.
Yeah, I managed to pick up a Z30, Toshiba Z30 Ultrabook at a really ridiculously cheap price. And it's far superior to any of the Raspberry Pi or Pine 64-based laptops.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't it have issues with playing video like on a web browser? It doesn't have hardware accelerated video or something like that?
There's pretty much issues with everything, to be honest.
Duly noted. Okay.
Ken, have you ever played with the Pi Top?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, we've got a couple of them that we use at the local Raspberry Jam. Nice little kits. The desktop versions a lot more economic than the laptop version. The laptop version works out about £300, but the desktop one you can get for just over £100.
Yeah, I had a look at that, but then you're ending up with it's not economical. I'm all in favor of supporting free and open source projects, but man, it's not good value for money, in my opinion, especially the laptop, because you're going to buy a keyboard, mouse, and thingy, and then you're spending significantly more than you can go and buy a Chromebook for.
Yeah, you know, Door has, you know, same Pinebook I have, and I know he originally was a big backer of the Pi Top, but then, you know, after a while, couldn't get anything for it, and I think it. In the day, he's probably more in favor of the Pinebook as far as value, but comparing the two and seeing what I have, I would definitely go for the Pinebook first.
Okay.
I think the key is if these laptops are upgradable with the latest version of whatever board it is. So if it's the Pine 64 at the moment, if they'll make it so that you can swap out that and put the new board in when that eventually arrives, then maybe it makes sense once you've got the actual Pinebook Same with the Pi Top, because you can swap out the original, you know, you can use all the iterations of the Pi in them, so you're not having to buy a new one every time a new Pi comes out.
No, I think it's great value for money, except I've had to, now it isn't great value for money because it costs me double in taxes and shipping and all the rest. And the keyboard is literally unusable for me because I use the shift key the whole time, and the delete key is an on-off, where the delete key would normally be. It's an on-off button. Something as simple as the double quotes are on a function key. It's just why that keyboard has been put on it boggles the mind.
Is there a way that maybe you can remap it? Remap some of the keys?
No, physically they're tiny. They have shift. They've made the keyboard so that it's more or less scrunched over to the right, and then we have all these keys left over, and instead of putting them full-size keys, they're half-size keys. It is unusable as a keyboard.
Yeah, I saw someone mention that online, that it looked like they started great and they ran out of space. You know how kind of little, when little kids start writing on a banner and then they kind of scrunch everything at the end?
Yeah,
kind of like that.
And I don't see why, because, I mean, there's the standard keyboards, and I'm sure you can get them, the mind boggles why they went for a custom keyboard. I've never seen a keyboard like this anywhere ever at all ever.
Yeah, I've only ever played with the Pi Top, and the keyboard on that's quite reasonable, so can't really talk about the Pine.
Well, having had the EPC 901 with those tiny keys, that keyboard probably wouldn't bother me much, though at this point I'm just speaking in theory. I actually pulled out the 901 from storage some time ago, and I just looked at it and I said to myself, how did I ever use this keyboard?
I have it right here, and I'll actually compare the keyboard. I have an original PC here, and I'm going to pull it down and compare it and be able to give you a comparison.
Well, because I know the 701 had a smaller screen, but I don't know if it was even smaller in design. That might be even smaller. Maybe it was just the screen size.
Yeah, I think it was just the screen size. When they upped it to a 9, I think there was less of a bezel on it.
Yeah, I've got to wonder, listening, Ken, if there was a different keyboard on the European version, because it's small, but I never had any of those problems. Oh, it's a toggle key or whatever.
Ken's just digging something out off the shelf.
Yeah, I'm digging it out there. I'm actually taking it out now, and the keyboard, the shift key, is literally 10 millimeters wide, which corresponds to something like 2, 4, 1, it is about 3/8 of an inch.
See, size has not been the problem for me, because I've always wanted an affordable GPD, and there's one supposedly coming out in February that's like $300.
I can't find where I put the EPC now, but comparing it to a Chromebook keyboard, I have never seen a key, the actual key that you press, that small. And it's almost that with everything that I do, that I need to go shift something or other, because you need to use control keys and whatever. You know the way you're writing computer code, you're always using extended characters. And you find it's right beside the arrow key, and then you're moving across one. It's just really, really, really strange. Very bad choice.
Yeah, that might have been the cheapest keyboard they could get to keep the price where it is right now. I'm sure some of the other ones with better layouts may have cost a little more, may have jacked up the price on the actual Pinebook.
Yeah, would be nice to have given, you know, had an option to switch it out or to pay an extra little bit more, because really it makes the machine completely unusable. I've got a 32-character password with all sorts of thingies going in, and it takes me 4 times every time to hit my password correctly, because none of the keys are in the correct place. It's supposed to be a QWERTY keyboard, yes. The extended characters are somewhere else. Quotes and single quotes are somewhere else. And so then by the time I pick it up in order to do something fast and simple, whereas if I picked up one of the other Chromebooks that I have, I'd be logged in and job would be done and then shut it down. It's just now every time I pick up the book that I wanted to be, oh, this is great, I'm using a free open source piece of hardware, and now I'm going, I don't want to touch it because I'll just get frustrated.
Yeah, once that you got that muscle memory going and you don't have anything that works with it, it gets frustrating.
Well, I
will not be able to get the muscle memory for this because my fingers physically will not be able to hit the key. I need to physically look at the keyboard to put where my finger is. It's that small. There is no margin for error.
I remember Dan used to complain, you know, I think he was using Emacs for an editor and he had to have an escape key. And things like the Remax tablet didn't have one.
I mean, that I can happily remap keys. That's not a problem. But when they're physically so strange and in a different place, then it's... Even then, I've, you know, used Solaris keyboards and different other keyboards. And eventually, over time, you get used to it. But with this, I don't think I ever will. And I really, 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 really wanted to like this project.
Yeah, you get disappointed when you... You buy something, think it's going to be really nice, and you're supporting a good project, and then you find it, and you're really disappointed.
And I am, the mind boggles as to why they put KDE on there. Just the mind absolutely boggles.
Does KDE crawl?
Yep. It's, you know, something like LXQT would have been nice and zippy or whatever, but it's just everything takes so long. It's a single task computer. And it's running one big application, which is KDE, and that's it. Yeah, everything else is, it's just so... Yeah, I understand why the KDE guys do, and I like KDE, and I like the guys, what they're doing, but really, it also sets the wrong expectations. If you say this, this machine is capable of driving KDE, yes it is, but it's not capable of trying anything else. It's not capable of doing anything on top of that, I don't think. And I'm comparing it to like a Raspberry Pi. I use Raspberry Pis all day, every day for stuff. They're part of my main workflow. And if you give them one task, they'll do it, yeah, and stuff. So, yeah, it's a bit disappointing. But it's okay. I'm talking among friends, so you'll keep all this to yourself.
I don't see anything wrong with saying if you don't think something's particularly good anyway. You know, there's been plenty of projects out there that have failed to deliver or delivered a disappointing product in the end.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm letting the project down by saying that. I think what they have is so good that when I plug in my laptop and once I get to a console, then bam, I'm productive, you know. But just I'd love to be able to change the keyboard is my wish, basically.
Send them a message and tell them that the next iteration should have a different keyboard.
Yeah, and then I have to pay double to get us.
Yeah, well, get someone to get it as a present if they ever come out with a decent one.
Have any of you any tips for scanning photographic negatives?
I've never scanned negatives. I've always scanned prints in the past, but you can get some nice little negative scanners. The only problem is they work with preset formats. There's very few that are, unless you're going to go into the expensive territory, that'll do the large negatives and things like that.
I'm scanning everything on the flatbed scanner, the print offs, and I also got a thing from Aldi, one of those negative scanner jobs. Let's see what they get.
Is that for 35mm?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
You have to do a show about it.
I think I've already done two or three shows on my scanner. And once I start doing this, I'll do it. But right now I'm just going through a shoe large orange crate full of, those photo folders that you get back from the chemist that have the photos on the inside pocket and the negatives on the outside pocket.
Oh, yes. Remember them well.
And trying to separate them out so that I know what I can have to scan, and putting the negatives into a A4 negative holding sheet thing.
Problem was, back in them days, you really had to think about it before you took any photos, because of not just the cost of the film, but the cost of developing. Nowadays, people just snap away and take 300 or 400 photos every time.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, you get plenty of memories, but then you've got to sort through them for the ones that you want to maybe print off or hang on the wall or whatever. And you've got hundreds, if not thousands, of them to look through.
That's true, but a long time ago, I used to take a lot of 35 millimeter, and you still, even then, I would take a roll of film. If I got two pictures even worth printing, I thought I was pretty lucky. And yes, it was more expensive to do it. Now you take 50 pictures, and if you got two or three that are worth printing or I guess putting on a computer, that's worthwhile.
Yeah, big revolution in photography, really. But there's still a market for the old film photography. I think some of the professionals, particularly portrait artists, still use film.
I wonder if they want to buy a couple of cameras that haven't been used in 15 years.
You'll have to try. Go on eBay, see what they go for.
I'm sure it's less and less each year.
Yeah, until they become collector's items, and then you might make mega books out of them.
Yeah, I've got...
Resolution on film still might be slightly better, but I think we're catching up.
Yeah, I think one of the latest Canons now is 50 megapixels or something.
My digital camera is still 12 megapixels, but I've been looking at newer ones in the 20 or so range, but I don't take enough pictures, and so I've thought, okay, if I can start taking pictures again and take enough to justify going out there and spending, you know, $500 or $600 or $700 on camera gear, then I would do it. But so far I haven't gotten off my butt and done that.
Yeah, I think the high-end ones tend to be SLRs, so they're the ones with the really, really high resolutions at the moment. But as with anything else, it tumbles down into the consumer market eventually.
Yeah, I bought an SLR here a few months ago, and the default lens with it was still, you know, if you're in a room with people, you could take the picture, which is not a lot better than my... you know, cell phone camera or the non-SLR I had before, so I did spend money on getting some longer range lenses. You know, one of them probably take good half a mile or more, but you know, I wasn't sure what I needed, so I got a couple lenses. So I'm kind of covered. I still don't know what I'm doing.
I'm just looking on the Canon site at the moment, and one of their EOSs, the 5D Mark IV, that's a 30 meg full frame sensor. But I'm pretty sure I've seen one with a bigger sensor than that.
Well, they've certainly gotten quite good. I don't know if they're exactly as good as Kodachrome or not, but they're certainly very, very good now. And I need to upgrade mine. My camera was, I think, around $600. Gosh, I'm not sure whenever they were making 12 megapixel cameras, but it's probably time to get a new one. But I'm still in that same price range. It's not at all professional. It's better than your cell phone is about what you say about these cameras.
Yeah, I remember getting my first point-and-shoot before cameras became ubiquitous on mobile phones, and I think it was a 2-megapixel, and I thought it was the bee's knees.
Well, that's the trouble I always had is, you know, I had a cell phone camera the year I went to Philadelphia and, you know, a few other big cities and stuff, and it's like... you take a picture and it looks good in your eye, and then you look at the image and it looks like you're 12 miles away.
Yeah, a lot of the modern prosumer ones, they've got super zooms on them and things like that, and it's not quite as bad as that nowadays.
I like to have when I was taking a lot of pictures, I've got two bodies. I would put one kind of film in one, usually color slide film, and then black and white print film in the other. And then I have a bag full of lenses that were all fixed, because I don't know if it was true or not, but back in the 70s, the idea was that zoom lenses weren't any good, so nobody really used zoom lenses if you were serious. So I had a bag full of individual focal length lenses to change out. And so you're taking a ton of stuff with you, but now the lenses are so good, you might need two. Get zoom lenses, and then you're done. You know.
Yeah, you might need three if you want a macro.
Yeah, I wish I knew more about it, because it's something.
For macro, I had a Bellos that I took my 50 millimeter lens and attached to the front, and then connected my camera to the back, and I could zoom in like that. It was a thing with a couple of rails and gear. You cranked it in and out to focus down to really, really close, and stuff like that. And I have no idea what they do for macro these days. You may still have to do stuff like that if you want to talk about really close stuff.
Sorry, I was typing and I missed a lot of what you said, Mungo.
Oh, I was talking about how the use
unique to turn off text to speech.
How you used to do macro in the old days with either a hard extension or a Bellos. I had a Bellos type extension to put. You take your normal lens. You put your normal lens on the end of a Bellos and push it way away from your camera body, and that's why you shoot the macro. And these days, you're right, there might be a special macro lens that will do all that for you. I don't know what that is these days.
Sorry, I was just checking to see if text-to-speech was on, but it's not on mine.
It's on mine. I couldn't figure out how to turn it off.
Found it under configure. If it's ticked, it's on. If it's not ticked, it's off.
Oh, it's ticked, but I couldn't get it to untick.
Yeah, I rejoined. I was told I was breaking up badly. I can hear everybody perfectly.
It's a little bit better, 51, but not much.
Well, apparently I can be understood, so maybe that's the best I can do right now.
That's gone a little clearer. Were you speaking closer to the mic then?
Yeah, I swung it in a little bit now. Is that better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
How's that? I increased the gain on my volume control.
Not too bad. You're definitely not breaking up like you were 5 minutes ago.
Okay, that may be what I have to do then.
Audio's a funny thing.
Well, like I said, I'm dealing with new ISP, so who knows what's going on.
So who's your ISP in the States then?
It is blazinghog.com.
God, they have some good names.
Yeah, that's not exactly a name I would have picked if I was going to, you know, sound professional. But yeah, that did seem at the time to be my best option.
Did you at least consider not using them just because of the name? I think I would have, like, looked around to try to find something better.
Yeah, I did go out on the on Google and say Blazing Hog scam, blah blah blah.
Hey 50, you're gonna have to get one of those desk bells every time you mention their name as a plug. Just give them a ding every time you mention their name.
I may have to. They're not up to the speed they promised, so I do know my neighbors. They had to get some plug-in antennas to their to their wireless modem. So, we'll see. If I can get up to that speed, fine. I will be their number one fan. If not, you know, either way, I will do an HPR and say, yeah, this is my experience.
Go ahead, Munga.
As far as getting up to a particular speed, that's what kind of what they promise. They say, we'll get to up to 50 megabits, and you'll say, that means you promise not to go over that?
Actually, they are trying to guarantee 23 megabits up.
I'm lucky here in the UK. I'm with the only purely cable ISP, and I get my contract says I'm promised up to 100 meg, and I regularly get up to 130.
Who are you with?
I'm with my friends Virgin Media.
And a fine body of people they are. Gosh, what a wonderful company that is.
I wonder why you're saying that, Ken.
Absolutely no reason. Completely impartial. Nothing to do with...
Of course you are. Apart from data security, they're not too bad.
I've been on
I shall refrain from commenting.
I've been on the same cable for about 20 years, and I think it started off at about 0.75 megabits, and over the years it's just slowly gone up a little at a time, never an announcement, never a letter saying, look what we're going to do for you. But then I went also about over 15 years with never a raise in the cost, and even now it's not but a few dollars more than I originally started with, and I get typically about 60 megabits down, and it's about 5 or 6 up.
Yeah, I'm getting about 5 or 6 up, but like I say, I've got over 100 meg down, which is brilliant.
Well, I'm in a rural area, so 20, what they promised, 23 isn't half bad.
If you get 20 or 23, that sounds perfectly usable for most anything.
Well, like, you know, sure. But what I'm getting right now is 1.6, which is better than what I had, because what I had was guaranteed 3, and it might bounce to 6, but it wasn't consistent. You know, I would go on and, yeah, we can't stream that, and then I would have to go and, you know, reset the modem or the uplink, and sometimes I have to do it 2 or 3 times to get enough speed to get to do streaming, and still not what I was supposedly paying.
I remember when I thought 2 meg was absolutely fantastic when I first got my cable connection, because I'd gone from ADSL broadband at half a meg, and when I came up here, got cable and got 2 meg, I thought, wow, speed. Now I can download an ISO of Ubuntu in about less than 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. When I first got on, quote, broadband, it was like maybe 0.5, 0.3.
Is there anybody out there?
Sorry, I was just having a look at my phone. I got a ding.
No worries. I need to do family stuff now once they finish this chapter of Harry Potter. It's a Christmas tradition. Actually, it's a holiday tradition. When they have holidays, my wife reads one of the Harry Potter books.
Ah. So you're not watching all the movies then, back to back?
I haven't watched any of the movies at all. It would ruin it.
Okay. I actually quite like the movies, and I haven't read all the books.
We bought the books when my brother recommended the first book when it came out, and then we read that one, and the second book had just come out. So from then on, we were like waiting for the next book to come out.
So you were one of those ones that were waiting at the bookstore at midnight, waiting to get your hands on the next copy?
Not at all. I pre-ordered on Amazon. Are you mad?
Someone gave me the whole of Babylon 5 and the related movies as a box set, including the Crusade 13 episodes. So I've got my way to work through them shortly.
I never got into Babylon 5, to be honest, but I was thinking about it.
Yeah, fantastic show that was. I think it changed science fiction on TV forever.
Oh, I was a huge B5 fan in the day. I did not do the sequels as much, and I think it would have taken off if they hadn't done it against Sportsball. Not Crusade, but the
thinking of Legend of the Rangers.
The Rangers, yes.
Yeah, I think that'd have been a great show.
Though I was not a big fan of Crawl Into a Hole and Punch the Bad Guys.
Yeah, it was really good series, Babylon 5, and I enjoyed watching the spin-offs, but the whole Babylon 5 experience was really good. Well, 1-4 was good. Season 5 went downhill, but that was because they had to, they'd already used up the story in seasons 1-4 because they thought they weren't going to get recommissioned.
Exactly. It was like, we got to finish it off in this year.
Now, there's the thing that annoys me is series that stop on a cliffhanger and then get cancelled.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely annoying.
But they want to stop in the cliffhanger so people will write in and say, hey, we need another season.
Yeah, that worked for Browncoats, Selenium, what do you call that? Why is my brain not working today?
Old age?
Yeah, it could be. Turn 50, but I think it's just tiredness.
That's me calling the kettle, the pot calling the kettle black, though.
Serenity. Well, Firefly, of course, Firefly. But at least Firefly had the decency to do the graphic novels and make the movie. That then finished up the stories for me.
I've not heard of that one.
Firefly! Oh, my God. It's brilliant.
What was that? Who produced that?
Josh Walden.
So is that an American show or a European one?
American one. Absolutely brilliant. It won't take you too long to go through it.
I'll have to look out for that.
And there's a thing I ran across the other day. I don't know if it's fan-made or if it was ever serious. An animated Firefly.
There was Firefly, the TV series. They only did one series of it. And it wasn't aired in order, but you should watch it in order. And then you had... there were some graphic novels in between, and then there was Serenity, the movie.
Yeah, they didn't actually air, I think, all the episodes.
It was absolutely terrible.
I mean, I think to this day, Nathan Fillion wants to restart the series.
Yeah, he's wanted to do that for some time, but yeah, I don't know if it'd be possible now, so yeah.
No, probably not.
Basically, it was a space western, is the word. Absolutely ridiculous, but... Fun piece of stuff.
Well, actually, it's not, if you look at the premise, it's not that far off. I mean, you're saying that, transporting people, anything across the Earth or, it's supposed to be taking place in the same solar system. Anything across the solar system is really expensive, so it is a lot cheaper to transport horse embryos than it is tractors, and that was the whole premise of the series. The whole western aspect and the whole thing that, yes, projectile launchers are legal, whereas, energy weapons are not.
I'm reluctant to say even much more. A good series. I might go and have a look at Babylon 5, see how we go.
Yeah, I just put a link to the, IMDb.
IMDb.
Yeah,
saw that.
Site.
Well done.
So what other TV shows do people get into?
Well, at the risk of boring people who have listened to the episode from the beginning, I have more or less stopped watching TV series and switched to watching YouTube channels.
That's strange you should say that, Ken, because that's what I've been doing over Christmas.
I've even put some scripts up there in HPR for your that will allow you to easily download stuff and put it into folders that you can sync up with your mobile phone and stuff if you've got a commute.
Well, I'll have to have a look at that. Yeah, I've been watching some YouTube channels. These are video channels on restoring old die-cast metal cars. You know, the old Dinky and Corky.
Yeah, the other ones, yeah.
I love them. They're fantastic. Being an engineer by first profession, some of the work these guys put into them is absolutely amazing.
Phenomenal.
I thought I was the only one to listen to watch those occasionally. All the old Mattel and Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah, watching them as well.
I haven't watched a lot of those car restoration things. But occasionally you'll see one and you think, I might watch that. But I tend to only subscribe to something if... So my logic is I keep track of stuff going around the internet on the best of YouTube and I have a show on the HPR about that. And if I see a channel coming up kind of about twice, I go have a look at the channel and see if it's interesting. And then if I think it is, I have a script for downloading the entire channel and I'll have a quick scan through there. And then if I think it's good, I'll go back to the beginning and watch all of it. And then if I think it's really good, I'll subscribe to it at the end.
My trouble with the Hot Wheels and the Mattel cars is I will hit these videos and say, yeah, this is incredibly rare and you could make a lot of money. And I know I had these as a kid and they all burned up in the fire. And I'm like, yeah, let me go get a hammer and beat myself in the head.
Yeah.
Well, as for me, I still have a Netflix and Amazon Prime account. So I haven't watched much of anything lately. But the last couple of days, I sat down and kind of finished up the last season of House of Cards, which was, I won't spoil it for anybody. But aside from that, if it's anything YouTube, it's usually something on retro computing or retro gaming. I like watching the LGR, Lazy Game Reviews. I'm subscribed to that one and a couple other ones like 8-Bit Guy, things like that.
Oh yeah, he's cool. I'll watch a few of his. All right.
Yeah,
we proposed a series where you could give your recommendations for YouTube channels to follow. So
I was just thinking that I've just had a look at my YouTube channel and I've got 161 subscribed. Obviously,
that's
some
a series
of them I've
right
just,
there.
Yeah, I've just subscribed to some of them just so I can find them again. But, you know, obviously that would make a couple of shows.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm subscribed to a good number of things on YouTube. But some of them are mainly music. But even those would be good to recommend as episodes. So I think we've got maybe a good year's worth of episodes there. Some of them are mainly music. But even those would be good to recommend as episodes. So I think we've got maybe a good year's worth of episodes there.
No, probably. 260 slots just became free.
I've got to reserve some for Liverpool Makefest and for Odd Camp interviews.
Yeah, do that. Send an email into the list and then shouldn't be a problem.
No, I was just thinking of my personal content. You know, saving some of what I'm going to do for the HPR site.
Hey, have any of you, going back to the whole YouTube thing, have any of you seen the videos from, I think it's called Ahoy? He usually does, he has different types of, like, they're almost documentary-like. And he had one, I remember the first one I saw, one was of the urban legend Polybius video game, and he's got a couple other good ones. They're very well done.
Yeah, you pasted those into the IRC one time, and I took a look at them. That was very good. I watched that with my wife, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he's got this way of keeping you engaged. It's very well produced.
Basically, it's a PowerPoint presentation, but still very good.
Yeah, it's pretty much that. But even I guess the tone of his voice and how he speaks and everything, it just captures you and really kind of immerses you into the whole subject matter.
And you know, since I watched that thing, I've seen so many references to that everywhere in comic strips, in the back of TV shows. Once you're aware of it, you see that game being played absolutely everywhere. If there's a computer or a arcade game anywhere on a comic strip, it's more than likely going to be that one.
Oh, the Polybius one, yeah, that's one of those urban legends of the internet, or even before the internet.
Like that famous scream in movies that you put in as a nomad.
Well, there's that other one. What was it? The Cicada something or other. I forgot what the numbers were. Yeah, Cicada 3301, I believe it is. I was looking it up.
What was the name of the computer again?
No, it was an internet puzzle called Cicada 3301.
Yeah, but the arcade game was called what again? I completely forget.
Oh, Polybius. Poly as in polygon, and then B-I-U-S, I believe it is.
Yeah, I got it on Wikipedia. I'll put it into the show notes. And I'll have a look for his channel as well. Oh, yeah, that's the guy. Links in the show notes, my friends.
Nothing, not of the likes of Polybius, but still very, very good. There's also one of the brief history of graphics that I recommended to my eldest son, who's studying video game design. Thought he'd be interested in that.
I am more and more recommending videos and YouTube and stuff. Oh, a conversation at work, and then you go, here's a video. There are so many explanations for things that people ask questions for now. We're living in a wonderful time, I believe.
Yeah, we are, in spite of so many other things.
Hey, 15K Wizard, how's it going?
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Tony. Didn't see you on there.
Hey, long time no see.
Right? It's been less than 12... No, it's been less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
How's the stream going?
Seems to be going quite smoothly.
I've been awake for a good 30 seconds now.
So you won't listen to the recording yet?
No, I haven't. Kind of went to a New Year's Eve party a day early last night.
Ah, head's a bit woolly.
No, just had some really good conversation, you know, and I wasn't completely sober, but I wasn't really falling down drunk either.
That's all right, then.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to break up whatever conversation was going on before I got here.
We were talking about YouTube channels and various things before you got here.
What line of conversation on that? Monetization?
Well, Ken, just before you you joined, Ken was talking about using YouTube as a way to point out how to do, you know, if someone had asked a question on something, that he'd point them towards a YouTube video.
Why is the sky blue type of thing?
But
that
I was talking.
Tides was one that we had a big discussion about at work, and then I got, here's a YouTube video. Thanks, guys. Bye. Well,
yeah,
actually,
let somebody else explain it for you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a good question, and that one I had seen and deleted and couldn't find it again. So then I added to my downloader script that it downloads the descriptions of the YouTube videos. So I keep those even if the video is gone.
What do you use for that?
Oh, there will be a show on the HBR feed describing that.
Oh, good.
Well, you can go to the upcoming shows, and there's a link in there, and you can use the script.
Okay. I'll take a look.
Basically, YouTube DL, and then you can download the raw data of the descriptions.
Like me some YouTube DL. I haven't used it for descriptions, though.
It is awesome, and I need to remind myself when I hear this that I should throw them a few quid.
Yeah. No, I use YouTube DL to replace some the RSS feed functionality that got taken away a couple of years back.
And oddly enough, I have put a show coming up to use the RSS feed, download it, and do all that sort of cool stuff with basically in my RSS read for YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, I've seen a program floating around that supposedly converts YouTube videos back into RSS feeds, and then you can generate your own and then use that to get your videos.
I heard from Dave Morris, and there's another few. There's today, actually, on HPR. Let me just go to it. Yeah, today's show by Taj is really simple YouTube. So there's a hidden feature on YouTube subscriptions where you can get an OPML file out.
Okay.
And that contains something like 15 to 20 of the last shows. And then my script, which will be coming out on the... Yeah, on the 4th, on Friday. So next Friday, you can go into the download page in episode 2720, and that is an RSS script, which will take that OPML file and basically uses XML Starlet to pick out the various different bits and pieces. And
that's so much cooler than me using YouTube DL and cron.
Yeah, well, you can use this and cron. So, yeah, that's what I do. It's actually quite fast as well, because I was using YouTube DL. I have an episode already done where I was comparing the last downloaded date. So a bit like Bashpotter used to do, and then the URL of the channel, and then an ISO 8601 date of when I downloaded it last. And then you go in and it checks every video and skips over the ones that it doesn't have. But that just takes a long time, especially if there's...
Right, right, yeah. No, I've watched that happen, because even if you tell it, you know, not more than 6 months old, it's still going to check every video in the list, even if it's gotten to the point where they're all 6 months older.
Yeah, so the compromise here is you download everything once, and then you can use your subscription manager, and you run that every day, and you get all the feeds.
Well, I will check it out when the show hits eight.
And then I have another one that's specific to me, which is I take those videos and load them on my phone and kind of keep them synced, which has been a big pain. Very, very difficult to do. A lot more difficult than I thought when I started it.
What do you use to sync to your phone?
It's a script based on rsync, but the problem is that my connections to the phone will drop, because all my methods for getting to my phone, either using a USB connection or an SSH connection or an SFTP connection, are all flaky. So it needs to check at every point to make sure the connection is there.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
It's the same one I made on the show yesterday, on Mintcast yesterday. ETSync, now Resilio Sync.
Ah, very good.
I mean, because it's using the BitTorrent technologies, every time it connects to a network, it's going, well, if you have it set up that way, leave mine paused unless I know I've added something that I want on my phone. I'll move it to the file on my computer and then turn it on my phone and let it finish. But even with a partial connection or anything like that, it's going to get you a part of the data, and then it loses connection, it's going to pause, and then it's going to pick it up again right where it left off.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
What was that called again? ETSync?
BTSync is the old name for it. It's right. And now it's Resilio Sync. R-E-S-I-L-I-O.
Yeah, got a link. It's in the show notes. And we heard it on there. Okay.
Hmm? Oh, Mintcast Mintcast.org. Episode 299. I probably mentioned it in a couple other shows, too.
You coming on here shamelessly plugging other podcasts? Tut, tut, tut.
I will. All day long.
And what's wrong with that, Ken?
That's what HBR is for, my friends. People get surprised when they hear that. Yes, well, we're more
wait
than
until
happy
the
to
Tilts guys show up.
Guns and flight guys. Guns and...
Right.
Guns and planes.
Yeah, they're supposed to be joining en masse at 7 o'clock our time, 2 o'clock Eastern Coast time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they told me.
I can only do the same for Linux time. Basement.
Yes.
That sounded like a shameless plug right there. Hey, Joe, how are you doing? Say hi.
Hi.
Right here.
Hi, Jojo.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. He went back to his iPad.
No. Okay.
Oh, I the yeah, in the background. Hold on. I'm going to have really crappy audio for a second. All right, go ahead, Jojo.
Hello.
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 Do you know where I am?
Do you know where I am?
No.
I'm in the UK.
I'm in the UK.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
Do you know where that is?
England.
Correct.
Correct.
Well done.
Wow.
My dad.
Where Holland is.
No.
Okay. Dad threw him a lifeline.
Oh yeah. What is your favorite sport?
My favorite sport. You probably never heard of it because it's.
Probably never heard of it because
it's. Cricket.
It's cricket.
Oh, I've heard of it. And I've actually played cricket too.
You've played cricket.
You've played cricket.
Yeah, at school.
Wow, brilliant.
Wow, brilliant.
Yeah.
So, were you a batsman or a bowler?
Were you a batsman or a bowler?
We get to do both of them.
Right.
Right.
I can tell you my favorite sport.
Yeah, what's your favorite sport?
Hockey.
Ah,
ice hockey or...
Yeah, we're hockey fans here.
Hockey.
Gee, I wonder why, Joe.
Because I was raised like that.
Who's your favorite team?
I have two favorite teams.
Hmm.
New York Rangers, my first favorite team, and the Las Vegas Knights.
So what about baseball?
What about baseball?
None.
You're not into baseball at all?
I'm into soccer, but I do it by myself.
The only reason to be in baseball or be into baseball is if you're a closet statistician.
And you need multiple players to play that.
You need multiple players to play hockey.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
Not really.
Yeah, you do.
I play it by myself.
What?
I play two or one player.
Technically, you can play baseball by yourself in the same way.
Yeah, but it doesn't kind of work like that.
It does. Well, just as much as hockey by yourself does.
Yeah, you'd have to be thrower and then have to run.
You toss the ball straight up in the air, and then you wait for it to come down, and then you smack it. And, you know, you're still the one that has to go get the ball.
And then throw it to space and try to get it. That sounds fun.
Skip that part, but okay.
When I was a kid, we used to play tennis on our own.
Is that?
Tennis.
Oh.
Used to hit the ball against the wall.
Kind of sounds like wall ball.
Except you use it.
A ball.
Well, no, both games have a ball. One just a racket. Yeah, wall ball is a fairly popular college pastime.
All right, okay.
Go back. On your iPad. Yeah, that was my son.
Hey, that's on him.
Call me JC.
Okay, where was our conversation?
You mean the one we've just had, or the one we were talking about before your little Joe joined us?
The one before JoJo joined us.
I can't remember now.
Me either. If we were in Florida instead of Far West Texas, I'd introduce you all to my dad. Also, his name is Joe.
You can call me Jason.
This could get very confusing.
My brother from another mother, he actually lived with us when I was a kid, his name is Joe. I have a cousin. His name is, Joe.
Foreign Believers in Recycling, yeah?
My grandpa, his name was George, but he hated it, and he had everybody call him Joe.
This sounds like an HPR episode in the making, so...
The Joe clan.
Was my brother Daryl and my other brother Daryl.
It was actually a bit of a pain in the butt when I joined the military when I was 18, because there was already one person with my exact name in the military. Like, yeah, that's my cousin.
Ah.
Well, my dad was in the military too, but we all worked around it.
So which area did you serve in?
Army. I worked with Patriot Missile Systems.
Ah, I was in the Merchant Marine back in the day.
All right, everyone. I'll catch y'all later. Got some things to take care of.
Toodle pips, cheerio. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye. I'm going to go because sitting in one place for more than an hour or so gets a bit painful, so I'm going to go and stretch my legs, and then I'll rejoin you later.
Hope you feel better.
Thanks, Joe.
I'll be leaving shortly as well for the evening festivities.
Don't get too drunk.
No.
Hey, Honky, what's up? Looks like most of the Linux slugcast is here.
Don't.
I do try.
Hey, 50.
Hey, Joe, how's it going?
How you been? Not bad. Can't complain. What you been up to? I ain't talked to you in a little while.
Everybody's been complaining about my audio quality.
Oh, who's been complaining about your audio quality?
Me.
What are you running for a mic?
I think it's not his mic, it's his, the network is dropping out. But maybe after everyone's had breakfast over there, then the network will be back.
Yes, the wireless blaster headset.
Yeah, I eventually had to give up on my wireless headsets being good enough for podcasting and broke down and spent the massive $30 on a snowball mic.
So you reckon it's the wireless headset and not the network?
The thing about the Bluetooth headsets is they add some kind of compression, so even if you've got a good Bluetooth headset, for some reason it just doesn't come across well on podcasting.
It's not Bluetooth, it's, you know, wireless, but yeah, it could be.
That sounds like network. Did I drop off the network?
Nope, that was 50.
Okay.
I'm using a Bluetooth headset, but a H2 wired mic, so...
Really? Which one?
Compromise.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Zoom H2.
Zoom H2?
Yeah, Zoom H2. It,
H2.
That's a H, Hotel 2.
Okay, H2. I gotcha.
Sorry, weird accent.
Okay, I see a Zoom H2 handy portable stereo recorder.
That's the bunny.
Okay.
You plug it in, yeah, and it's a USB mic as well.
Yeah, that's a different price bracket, too.
Well, I've got my money's worth out of it.
Okay.
You bring it to shows and stuff as well, so I've done all my audio recording on it.
I've tried a couple of more expensive headsets, and that just added a bit of compression and didn't work well. I mean, for a long time I was using the LG HBS lines, and that was the 770s, the 810s, and the 780s.
Have you got a link for some of those?
It's just LG HBS. They're around the neck headphones. They've been around for a while now. I also had a pair of I'm using them for audio right now. A pair of Sennheiser Urbanite XLs.
Oh wow, they expensive? Yeah.
They were when they first came out. I think dropped in price. They were in the $300 range, and now I think they're in the sub $200 range for headsets. And they sound great. They just
what's the model number? Sennheiser what?
Urbanite XL.
Yeah, got the link. Thanks.
Okay.
We're filling out the show notes on the Etherpad linked on the website. If anyone wants to join along.
No, but I was using the LG HBSs because I enjoy soldering, and I'll be able to buy them on eBay in groups of 10 for about $40, and they'll all be broken, and I'll take them all and make working headsets.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay, cool. That is good. I must say, over the last year and a bit, I've been getting, well, a lot more than a year, but in the last year, all the effort that I've been putting into getting into electronics and soldering and stuff is starting to pay off. There've been a few pieces of kit that would have been thrown out, but I have a look at them, and as the e-blog says, if it's broke, it ain't going to get any broker. So,
exactly. But yeah, there's a couple of good podcasts out there that have really gone over how to do soldering if you're looking at it. I mean, but Know How with Robert Ballester, when he was doing the show, he went over how to do soldering several times, and I think he did a really good job. And I know Hack5 back in the day had a couple of soldering tutorials.
Yeah, we've even had an audio one on here. Mr. X did a series on how to solder it through audio.
Okay, cool.
I mean, it's not that hard. The hardest thing is starting.
Right. I've been soldering on and off for a long time, and when I started out, I was exceptionally crappy at it, and after years and years of practice, I'm much less crappy at it, but still fairly crappy.
Yeah, and the issue is, of course, you're getting older, eyesight's going, hands are getting wobbly, and all the components are getting smaller, so yeah.
Yeah, I didn't used to get a migraine doing soldering, and now, you know, I'm sitting so close to the piece, and I'm staring at it, and breathing in the fumes, because I'm right freaking there, so...
Yeah, get off my lawn.
Yeah, I'm about ready for that.
Yeah, sorry, just for everybody probably knows who's been listening to the recorded feed, but I am scanning photos and organizing my father-in-law's photo collection from the last, what appears like, 50 years, and I'm beginning to see the bottom of an orange box now where he hasn't thrown in, so that's why I'm not able to get to the push-to-talk button. Although nobody would notice this because there's truncate silence done by the time they've heard it, but just so you know, I'm not being rude.
Well, in a podcast that lasts more than 24 hours, you expect some silences.
So how long have you been podcasting now?
2 years, I think. I started on TLLTS about 2 years ago. Then I jumped And then I jumped over to the Linux Lugcast and still doing that with those guys. And I'm also recently, when the old hosts were leaving, started doing the Mintcast.
Wow, and you have time for all this?
I tend to make time. I mean, it's not as time-consuming as you might think. I was going to be doing Linux projects anyways, so...
I actually find the live shows are easier because, yeah, you just talk and that's it, stuff.
Hey, folks, this is CM Hobbs. I'm just seeing if my mic's working. This headset's clearly a bust.
That's working pretty good.
Working fine. Sounds very good at you.
Oh, very good. Hey, Ken, I need episode ideas. It's been about a year. I seem to do this about once a year. And my friend has a fancy new recorder, really high quality thing. So what sorts of episodes are we looking for at the moment? I've run plumb out of ideas.
How is that possible, sir?
I'm not terribly creative, that's how.
Oh, come on.
I want to hear somebody that's actually been hands-on with the Odroid Go.
The last time, I think, you were asking me about doing an episode on DNS, and I put together a very short one. It was all of like, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes. Maybe I could expand on that one. It was a practical guide more than the guts of the naming system, but maybe something on DNS. I don't know. Got a lot of amateur radio stuff I could do.
Yep, absolutely.
Got a lot of other Linux-y things. I don't know, just... Everything I've got is short. Well, we did the satellites already. There's all these crazy radio over IP and digital voice modes. We could maybe do one of those. There's I do a lot of low power Morse code stuff. That's possible. I don't know. I'll see what I can dig up.
The roundtable for the ham roundtable. Are you up for doing that again?
Absolutely. I really enjoyed that. I think it just kind of petered out a little bit.
I killed it. That's what happened.
Oh, great. Well, another thing that's happening is on January 26th, I know that's a little further down the road, but on January 26th and 27th is Winter Field Day here in the States, and I'm going to be operating on the 27th. I could probably do a sort of a live podcast from there and talk to some of the radio amateurs that are freezing out on the front lawn of a local lodge.
Yeah, can you do that? The hallway track type of thing, the feel of it, what it's like out there, even the, gosh, it's cold here, Bob, type of stuff. That's what it's like to be in the hobby or one of those field days. That would be absolutely awesome. I would love that.
Yeah, field days are not, I guess they're a common thing in the vacation in the sense that they happen every year or twice a year if you do winter field day, but it would give a good idea of what events are like. And I believe we'll probably have... 5 or 10 different operating stations up with different modes. So maybe I could get some people talking about different modes they use that I don't know anything about.
Cool. And print off some business cards and just pass them around, you know, even if it's only a sheet of paper cut off with the HBR logo on it and the address.
Well, I'm organizing the space itself. So if there's anything you would like set up, I could put up a... I don't know that I can print a banner, but I could put up a couple of flyers or something like that.
Well, we have the HBR booths kit, so whoever has that can send it to you. That would be great.
Yeah, please do. My information on the site is still valid, even though it's been a year since I've posted.
Not a problem, sir. So whoever has the
HBR booth kit is in my basement.
Kafunda.
Who needs
excellent.
It?
CM Hunt.
I don't know that if I need a full booth kit. I just would be cool to put up some Hacker Public Radio propaganda at this Winter Field Day.
Well, when I say I have the kit, I have the big banner. So I'm not sure what else is supposed to be in the kit, but that's the kit I have.
I don't know what's in the U.S. kit, to be honest.
Oh, that's fine. I'll come up with some kind of banner. I know there's business cards. Maybe I can blow one of those up or something like that. Are the business cards visible on the main site, or is there some secret links
on the
track down?
No, it's under media, and it should be there. I'm failing that. If you can ping me an email, and I'll get back to you with it. Yep.
Very good. We'll give it a shot. I'll put up some sort of HPR propaganda, and I'll get my buddy's fancy recorder and see if I can't get some good audio. I need to play with it a little bit first and see. how the mics work, because it's apparently got multiple modes as far as the directionality of the mics and things are concerned.
Okay, guys, sorry to do this, but I have family time now. So I'm going to drop off. I'll probably call in after midnight here and wish everybody a happy new year. It was cool talking to everybody.
It was good talking to you.
I'll be back on again in the morning anyway, so if you're around, we could talk all day. See you later, guys.
Have fun, Ken.
Later, Ken.
Checking to see if the recording's still going. 1, 2, 1, 2.
No, we're not going. We're still here.
Run out of stuff to talk about?
Yeah.
Everything was going very chatty with about 4 or 5 people going, and I got a phone call and stepped out for about an hour and came back, and it was lots of people logged in and nobody's saying anything.
Yeah, just got quiet for a while.
I think it comes and goes.
Everybody's contemplating the wisdom of the last hour or so.
Well, no, I'm jealous that I missed out on the last hour. I just tuned in. I'm reading through the Etherpad now. Hopefully I'll find something.
So anybody read any good books lately?
I just finished the Airgun book from 1982, 83 maybe. It's actually pretty good. It's nonfiction. It's all about air guns from that era. So yeah, though I am looking for some good fiction that I need to augment my books with. I've got
what style of
Rebels in the Air, which is a radio book, and then The Art of Invisibility, but could use some nonfiction.
Oh, I can definitely suggest some nonfiction, but what style of nonfiction are you looking at? Sci-fi, fantasy?
Sorry, I meant to look at some fiction, not some nonfiction. Yeah, but yeah, okay. I like sci-fi.
Yeah, fiction.
Yeah, I like sci-fi quite a lot.
Then I would recommend the Takashi Kovacs novels. And
right,
John Scalzi's Old Man's War. And Damon.
What was the title?
Old Man's War.
Very good. I'll look that up. Most of my reading lately has been just nonfiction, so I need to get back to some good old science fiction.
Oh, and Damon. I don't know if you've read Damon or not.
I have not.
Damon and Freedom.
I'll look those up as well. Thanks.
They're by the same author. Let me see if I can bring that up. Danielle Suarez, has some really good sci-fi books.
All right, I'll add those to my list. The last sci-fi I read was some Werner Vinge, Children of the Sky, I believe it was. It was a really good one.
That reminds me, Brandon Sanderson has a new sci-fi book out called Skyward. Also a really good book.
I'd like to go back to where The Art of Invisibility is nonfiction.
Sir, that hurts, and you are correct. I've just been reading it a little bit. I know most of what's in it already, but I was curious. It seemed really sensationalized. The front cover has these bright green letters, the world's most famous hacker, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, is it a Mitnick book?
Yeah, it is. I figured it was worth reading.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed Kevin Mitnick's other work. What was that, Ghost in the Wire?
Yeah, talking about his exploits. He's also got The Art of Deception, which is a book on social engineering. I didn't learn much from that. I already knew most of what was there. But again, it's one of those things, like, I felt like I had to read it just because it was Mitnick.
Yeah, I think I've read 2 of his books, but I didn't read any more because he kind of went over the same things.
Yeah, he does tend to repeat himself. And I haven't cracked The Art of Invisibility yet. I've got it on loan from the library. I'm currently reading Rebels on the Air, which is a history of broadcast radio, but I'm going to dig into that one next. And it appears as if my library has both the Damon series and the Skyward book, so I'll be...
The audiobooks are pretty good.
I find I just can't get into audiobooks. I don't know. I have trouble paying attention to them. I can listen to a podcast just fine, but I lose myself with audiobooks. I lose what place in the book we were on.
It takes some practice.
I think maybe the link.
I ended up while I was in college. I worked the night shift at a 7-Eleven for like 5 years, and not much to do there. So audiobooks were a lifesaver.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. My wife sure enjoys them, but I just prefer sitting and reading.
We started listening to audiobooks back when they had movie rental places that also had a small section for cassette tapes where the mostly murder mysteries were a bridge to about 4 hours, and we would get them when we were going on a trip, and that was basically the only time we listened to them, but it kind of led into something that later became a kind of a thing you did, because as they became more available, we didn't, you know, I listen to them. My wife doesn't, but she'll only listen to stuff in the car, but I listen to an audio book from time to time, and then podcasts came up later than that.
That's really cool. The only audiobook I've ever had on cassette was a Bible, and I had probably 40 cassettes in this giant plastic book thing. It was a mess.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Most of the ones we got when we were renting them were 4 to 6 60-minute tapes, and they were just about right for most trips. And I would rent the tapes ahead of time and then copy them and then return them, and then I would have them in my collection, and I had a couple of dozen tapes, and we didn't listen to them but once, but I would have them for, if it took several days that we'd be gone on a trip, and we'd have a couple of 3 books. But then later you got, they came on CDs, and eventually, I guess, I don't know if you can get them on DVDs or not, but I guess they were later on CDs.
I've never seen them on DVD, but I do know my local library here does have books on CD, and my wife will occasionally get those if she's not streaming it to her phone, and she'll listen to them while she's going down the road. I did try to listen to a couple of books on CD while going down the road, but again, I found I just lost my place in the book. But I think Joe's right. Probably just takes a little practice.
Yeah. Well, your first couple of audiobooks, try out books that you've read several times.
Yeah, that's good advice.
I use mostly podcasts now because there's plenty of podcasts. But, a few years back, I would use audiobooks. And if I'm working in the garage, raking the yard, washing the car, doing carpentry work or something, I would listen to a book. And if I realized I've been thinking about something so hard that I was ignoring my book, I would just rewind my book a little ways and listen to that section again. It wasn't that big a deal. And for most of the things that were available in the early days were fiction stuff, not important. Right. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely use podcasts, especially HPR, when I'm mowing the lawn and doing the dishes. But, that only takes about an hour, so I don't know how much of a book I could absorb in that time. I do commute every day, so maybe I should try and listen to one on my commute.
Yeah, I got 2 hours worth of driving 5 days a week, so it's helpful then. But I also do the podcast listening as well, and mostly it's because I listen to the audiobooks at 3.25x, and that's slowed down for me because I was doing it like 3.8, 3.9. And I do the podcasts at usually between 2.2 and 2.6x.
Wow. My ears might work that fast, but my brain doesn't.
I'm right there. Yeah,
well, you tend to read faster than most people speak, right?
No.
No? Okay.
I can't make any sense of anything past 1.6x.
Once again, it just takes practice.
Mine's set at 1.2, and I've never felt like any faster made sense for me.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm the opposite of what most of you guys have said. My ADD will not let me just like sit down and read text on a page. And I think part of it is because my brain wants to go faster than I can actually read, to where audiobooks, I can just crank up the speed and it just goes in the speed that I want it to go. And I can do it while I'm doing something else, which I typically don't have time to sit down and just read for pleasure. So I can do it while I'm, mopping the floor or something. But I do the same thing with podcasts. I just crank it up because it's almost painful to listen to podcasts in real time now, because I'm just like, oh my God, get to the point.
Yeah.
Stupid question time. Does increasing the speed increase the pitch? Do they end up sounding like chipmunks?
No, most players have correction for that built right in.
Well, that's definitely
it doesn't sound like the chipmunks.
Well, I'll tinker with it a little bit. I find that I can read really fast. I can probably read faster than people can talk, and still absorb everything. That's right. From years of just hammering through books. So maybe I'll try and speed up a book or just try a book on my commute and see what happens. But I like the idea of reading a book or listening to a book that I've read before. That way I'm on.
All right. So even if you miss a section, you can still pick it up right where you were.
Yeah, exactly.
The way I used to do it with a book I would keep for commuting, I would have one book in the car, and my commute was about 30 minutes. And so I'd do half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the afternoon. And then I would have separately in a player, back then it was now it's my phone. Back then it was a separate MP3 player. And whatever I was listening to that I carried around would be a different book. And the one that went to work may take longer, but it was the same one every day. It stopped and then restarted, and it worked just fine for me. So that you might try that.
Yeah, that's a terrific idea. I'll have to give all of that a shot. It's just a world that I've never really jumped into for various reasons, but always interested in trying new.
Yeah, typically what I've begun doing is just buying ebooks of everything. And typically it's just whoever has what I want. Amazon, if I buy something through Amazon, I have to buy it and strip the DRM off of it, which is trivial to do. And then I use a ebook reader on my phone that does text-to-speech. And as long as you're okay with text-to-speech voices, that's how I do my audiobooks. I very rarely buy them.
Text-to-speech, just there'll be like a word somewhere in the book that gets used repeatedly that's completely pronounced wrong, and it'll just drive me nuts.
Oh, I love that. It's because you start to realize, like, your brain starts translating this mispronunciation to the right thing. It's kind of funny.
That's a great idea, though. I do read a lot of ebooks. I prefer the Dead Tree versions, but FB Reader on my phone will do text-to-speech. I've got that plugin, so that's something to experiment with, too. And a lot of good stuff here, guys.
Yeah, FB Reader is actually what I use.
You know that that listening to bad pronunciation and letting your brain fix that is how German turned into English.
I thought it was German mispronounced by people who spoke French.
Maybe some of that, too.
My wife's a linguist, and she's told me the story like 100 times, and I just sort of gloss over at this point.
She sounds very smart. You should listen.
She is. She's brilliant. Once again, my attention lacks after a certain point.
She probably doesn't speak fast enough.
That's going to be my excuse. Or I'll just tell her that I'm just charmed by her beauty and can't pay attention to what she's saying. And that'll get me out of it.
Oh, that's way better. And it might be true.
Yeah, for the most part. That's the story I'm telling.
The reason I thought about that is because I'm listening to a podcast right now, The History of the English Language, and it's just very good.
I mean, it's a really interesting story. I don't know. It's one of those things that English is so just a mess that it just sort of makes me want to throw away the language and start over with something else, because it's trying to work with kids who don't speak English and trying to teach them English, you just realize how ridiculous English is.
Have you ever listened to Hardcore History?
I have a little bit. I listened to, I don't know, four or five of them.
I have not, but it's been recommended to me like a million times. I just haven't got around to it.
I've listened to some of almost everything, at least to give it a try. Right now, I'm doing an astronomy course. I do things that have to do with science of different sorts, philosophy from time to time, although not this right now, and then always geeky technical stuff.
No, I tend to listen to the tech podcasts, but then my books tend to all be science fiction and fantasy. Big fan of Jim Butcher and Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, a couple of years back, I did a bunch of Jim Butcher stuff.
Cool. So, Codex Alera and Dresden Files?
Dresden Files.
Okay. I enjoyed Codex Alera as well, and then he's got another series that he's only done one book on so far, the Cinder Spire novels.
It's not a series then, is it?
Well, it's supposed to be a series. He's just only done the first one so far. Waiting for Peace Talks to come out.
I did science fiction and stuff when I was a teenager, that and westerns, and over the years I've gotten to, I don't know, Stephen King and other kinds of fiction, and then now I do more nonfiction, and my when I read a science fiction, I go back and do something like an Asimov that I read four times.
Right. Asimov was okay.
Okay?
Okay. That's about the best I can give it.
You know he wrote Star Wars.
Asimov was okay. The Foundation series was a bit long-winded.
And it's one of the few things I've read that's of any size that more than... mostly, I don't read anything twice, and I've read the Foundation series... when it was just three books, I had read it twice. And then when the next one came out, I go, oh, crap, I got to read it over again. And I started at the beginning and read all of them again. And so... I read the whole thing more than once. The last couple of books, maybe just twice. Somehow, Asimov seemed to make think about stuff more than just the possibilities that this guy really kind of considered this stuff.
Well, I like a lot of the stuff that has come out of his works and where his works have led. Just most of his books never really captured my attention all that much. Like Tolkien. I enjoyed his first book.
Which one was first?
The Hobbit.
I thought The Hobbit was barely okay, but I kept going and really liked the rest of the series. I've only read it once. My brother has read it multiple times and has the leather-bound volume, and I think he wishes he had more hair on his toes or something. But I've never watched the movie all the way through, any of the movies except the first one I tried to watch and couldn't watch it all the way through. So, I guess it carried the fantasy part two thing, but Samwise is okay in my book.
Yeah, he was the real hero of the tale.
Yeah, I don't know why they talk about Bilbo at all.
Because of the first book.
Yeah, I read old books. I don't read them anymore, but I listen to an old. I start digging for Robert Heinlein stuff, and my brother used to say that he wrote before he went crazy, but I kind of like some of the ones he went after he went crazy.
Robert Heinlein. It sounds familiar.
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Stranger in a Strange Land. Things like that. But The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is definitely, is top of the list.
I have to check him out. Okay, some you wrote Starship Trooper.
Yeah, not highly recommended, some of his early robot stuff was kind of interesting. He was a nudist and an atheist, and I think maybe a communist. I'm not quite sure about that. But if you read some of his really early stuff, he kind of worked those things in and into his books, so that I believe that the average science fiction reader of today who had never heard of Robert Heinlein and then just picked one of them up would go, where's this coming from?
All right, guys, I'll be back on later. I'm going to have to jump off for a little while.
All right, take it easy. Hey, is there anybody on right now that wants to talk a little bit about Linux?
Maybe. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know. I've my laptop, I'm using Ubuntu 16.04 and with the GNOME desktop, which I like, but they decided for the standard to dump Unity and went to a version of GNOME for 18.04 that doesn't translate that well in an upgrade when you run the upgrade directly, and then the extensions don't work and stuff. So I haven't upgraded my laptop that I actually use. I haven't upgraded it. I've tried it on a desktop that as a test and didn't like what happened. So I was just wondering if anybody else that had similar problems or had a, and it's made me want to go out and look at Mate and everything else again, which I had not done for a while.
Yeah, I tend to, I've had lots and lots and lots of issues with upgrades with Ubuntu, so I've kind of moved away from most of these. And there's only one computer in my house that uses Ubuntu, and that's the gaming computer that my daughter uses downstairs. I've gone to pretty much rolling on everything. So, you know, like everybody, I'm going to tell you that I use Arch because, you know, you're talking to me, so I have to tell you that I use Arch. That's, you know, the stereotype at least. Just to kind of keep from that, I use GNOME most of the time. I either use GNOME or i3 on whatever I'm doing. But I think the computer downstairs is running 1804 or 1810. I can't remember which one because I just recently redid it. The GNOME on there, once you kind of go in and strip everything out that they put in that makes it like Ubuntu-y, it's standard GNOME, and you can go ahead and put extensions in and stuff like normal. But yeah, I'm not sure what the upgrade path would look like. I would almost say, if you were going to try to upgrade from where you're at, maybe switch to Unity and then do the upgrade and then see if it breaks. I would just go into it expecting to have to reinstall. I mean, it seems like that is going to be pretty complicated. But to be fair, the 18 kind of series has been really good. I'm actually kind of surprised with snaps and stuff. I don't feel as restricted as I did before. It's almost kind of like a stable base with a little bit of rolling on top.
I don't have any problem with how it works. Like I said, I put it on a desktop and it seems stable and it works and you can do things with it. I really don't like the dock, and so I basically took this desk and I built it the way my laptop is that I use all the time, and added all my extensions in and everything, and then I ran the upgrade and it broke everything, and then I tried another install with where I just didn't, you know, I did it, and some of the extensions don't even work, and that might be why they broke.
I might just be depending on what extensions. I know there are a few extensions that I use, or used, I guess, past tense now, that because of, I guess, GNOME Shell moving to a newer version, they never went back and patched it, so it just doesn't work in general. unless I downgraded GNOME Shell, which I'm not going to do. I'm trying to think specifically what some of them were. But there were a handful, but they were nothing that was like mission critical that I felt like I couldn't do it. But that's, you know, it's just the way the GNOME plugin architecture is. It's kind of like the theming thing. It seems like it's kind of a hack. And people, if they build for one version, as soon as they update, they have to do something to rebuild it. I've never looked into it. But there have been several extensions that I've used over time that have just been kind of sunset because somebody didn't take care of it.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. Not that I understand what it takes to actually build one of these things, but I only use 4 or 5 extensions. I don't really load it up, but like my main thing is to get rid of the dash or the dock, what do they call that thing on the side where that those silly icons on the side, and I move them to the top of the screen, and it's kind of where I like them, and so that's been working fine for me for a couple of years, and so that's what I like, but I can't get the 1804 to do that, and so I'm still on 1604. I know that all this stuff works, and it, like I said, 1804 works, and I could live with it, I suppose, but I'm not in the mood to live with it right now. I lived through, you know, 25 years of Windows changing and learning all the new versions every time. And I've got a Linux thing I like the looks of. Oh, let's keep it this way for a while. Then 2 years later, bam.
Yeah, I don't know if you're watching the chat, but Kevin Wisher's throwing some stuff in there, and he's talking about right before Christmas break, they upgraded the server that they had from 1404 to 1804 with no breakage. That's insane and completely atypical of what I've ever had with Ubuntu. But to be fair, I don't use it often, so it could have gotten much better since the last time I did it.
Well, server is you can do that with server. It's desktop that's the deal. Server is fine. You can upgrade server.
That kind of breakage is why I've just stuck to Debian and Debian-based distributions. Lately, I've fallen into Antix and MX Linux because they're a Debian-based with some niceties on top. Every time I've tried to upgrade Ubuntu, even Ubuntu server, on any major leap, there's been all sorts.
I keep hearing about MX. Like, it seems like that's the new hotness.
I had no idea it was hot. I thought it was not very well known, actually. The forums are very quiet and the release cycle is very slow, and it seems like a hobby project to me, but I find that it just really works quite well. So on my machines that have a little more horsepower, I use MX. And as I understand it, it's just the Mepis repositories with the Antix loading facilities. And just those two projects combined. If I have a super low power machine, I just use Antix, though it works really well on low power stuff. There's not a lot of customization you can do. I mean, there's some stuff in the menus, and you can do your own customizations, but it does come with some a lot of opinionated defaults, but I find that the defaults work really well. And the defaults work really well for me in MX as well. But it's interesting that you say that. I didn't realize anybody was using it with any regularity. I thought it was kind of a hobby project.
It seems to like be inhabiting the same space that Solus did like last year and a little bit the year before, where you just started to hear rumblings about it and then everybody was talking about it. Like MX has come up like 4 or 5 times just in my world, like in the last 2 weeks, which is kind of like, oh, that's some momentum for something I'd never heard of before this. So I it seems like people are catching on to it being a cool thing. I have yet to try it.
That's pretty funny that you mentioned that, because I just looked at DistroWatch and MX is the second page hit ranking on DistroWatch now. I've been using MX for a couple of years, so that's kind of funny. I first found out about it through an amateur radio operator on YouTube, OH8STN, or Survival Tech Nord. He's a guy that builds batteries and does all these portable radios. And I caught him using Antix, and I installed it on one of my netbooks, and it worked so well. And then I saw that they had Mepis, and I thought, MX Linux, and my other machines have a lot more horsepower, and I thought, well, I might as well install it and try it, and it works really well.
That's hilarious. I think that's the first place I heard about it, too, was from his videos.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good stuff. That was probably 4 years ago when he first posted about using Antix. It was pretty interesting to see. You know, I've gone through this mess of using all these tiling window managers for years and ricing out my installs. But these days, all I need is a terminal full screen. That's pretty much it. And if I got a couple of monitors, I need like 5 or 6 terminals open and maybe a web browser and a copy of Emacs, and I'm content. I don't really care what it looks like anymore.
Yeah, one of my kind of New Year's resolutions, because I operate in two modes with my stuff, is either it's GNOME for just basic stuff, or if I want to do any kind of gaming or a lot of just any of the things I want to do that are pretty graphically things, I use GNOME, but the rest of the time I use i3. And I am a diehard Emacs user. So I want to try, there's a window manager called EXWM, which is basically kind of i3, but your computer uses all Emacs shortcuts. And I'm like, yes, I need this in my life.
I tried to use that for a while and it drove me nuts. I can't have my Emacs key bindings anywhere else. I used VI for about 15 years and switched over to Emacs while I was on a Lisp contract, and have now gotten Emacs and muscle memory. I found that, my tiling window manager of choice back in the day was Ion 3, and I found that I took well to Plan 9 because of Ion 3. It borrowed its key bindings from Acme, the editor, and with that rabbit hole, I was going to say the tiling window manager I was using the most here recently is called Notion, or not Ion, and I got a real kick out of that. Someone resurrected the project, and it was a lot of fun. I do enjoy i3. I use i3 at work, but these days it's just a lightweight window manager for me. Typically, I'm using like JWM on Antix or XFCE and MX, and I found that when I'm not using a tiling window manager, I just keep going back to XFCE because of how, you know, it's medium weight. It comes with its own utilities. that just generally work, and it's fine. The machines that I built for other folks, though, like at a school I do the IT at sometimes, the kids' machines and stuff, we just use GNOME. It works for them. It's pretty, and they have an easy time getting around. But I'm with you, man.
Yeah, that's funny. The first thing I do when I set up i3 is try to get everything as close to Emacs key bindings as I can, which is kind of hard because a lot of things don't want you to have crazy key bindings. But yeah, I'm the guy that installs plugins in Firefox so I can use Emacs key bindings there. I'm just a little warped, I guess.
No, I used to do that sort of thing, but I got tired of dragging around my .dot files, so I've just learned to live with the defaults now. I've switched machines too much. Luckily, the last few years, I've had very stable machines where I've kept the same machine for a long time, but I used to void the warranty far too often and really tired of lugging around a bunch of .dot files. Man, you weren't kidding about the popularity of MX. I've been doing some digging here. This is kind of crazy, and Antix has increased in popularity too. I wonder if it's because they just released 17.3 of Antix. I don't know if MX has gone up. That's interesting to see, just because of, I really thought it was obscure, but you know, it's going to be a double-edged sword. Wide scale adoption means good changes, and then wide scale adoption probably means a lot of dissent.
You really can't hate something until you get to know it a little bit.
That's a fine point.
I was a Windows administrator for server administrator for a really long time, and worked on every version of Windows from 4.0 to 2012, and you just, you know, Windows, they always, every new version came out, they had a few things they always deliberately moved from one place to another so that you just have to go look for them. And they, besides the desktop, the things that administrators go look for, they also move those as well. And so, yeah, okay, fine. You just got to get used to them. But with Linux, you can look at a whole bunch of different distributions and figure out one that's pretty close to what you want, and then maybe you can adjust it a little bit. And that's kind of where I did. I looked at a bunch of different distros and decided several years ago that I like GNOME, and but it took a couple of extensions to get it just right, and then those broke. Damn.
Boy, I feel that pain, and that's pretty well why I've settled on MX. It's got just about everything I need pre-installed and just a couple of tiny little tweaks, and we're up and and I'm glad we've had this conversation, because it appears as if they have updated to version 18. That means I'm behind. I guess I've got to upgrade.
Yeah, you've got to kind of keep up, but and it's not real pain, but it's kind of like, oh man, I thought I had it just the way I wanted it. And the one that the 1804, it works just fine. It's really, and it does have some new features that I'm trying to get used to. I have an Ubuntu server in 1804, and I'm using the desktop to try things out before I put them on the server. So I'm keeping the desktop version, but my laptop, which is my little desktop, is still 1604.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with the older software as long as you keep up to date with security patches. I run a lot of older versions of things, and as long as security updates are there, I see no problem with it. That's one reason why I enjoyed Debian Stable so much, was because it was just that stable. Yes, the packages were old, but damn it, they worked.
Yes, and 1604 is not really, really old. It's just, and it's definitely up to date, and it's LTS, and so it's fine.
I didn't realize that one was still LTS. That's a good observation.
Yeah, I don't see much point in doing the odd numbered years, and this server, I just built it, so it's 1804. In fact, I held off building it for about 2 months till 1804 came out, so that I wouldn't have to upgrade it, just, you know, right off the bat. And then I can keep it for, you know, I might keep it 4 or 5 years before I change it, because it's basically going to be my NAS. And it doesn't have to do anything special. I probably will put a couple of VMs on it, but it's basically going to be a file server, just going to stream some things to the laptops and phones and stuff here in the house. So I don't have to, it doesn't have to be too smart. All it has to do is continue to work and hit the hard drives. And you can do, it should be able to do that for until the hardware is old.
Yeah, I know that you mentioned that I need to overhaul my file server. I need to update it and fix the storage. I've been thinking about getting an external RAID, but I just haven't spent the time to do it. My home network is a bit of a mess. I spent more time focusing on my office network, making sure all my business stuff was put together properly. And my home network's in shambles, especially now that my kid's starting to hack with stuff and plug devices into the network. It's crazy over here. So I've got to spend some time with my NAS and my local servers and make some of the magic happen.
Well, this will be my first NAS. I've got a Windows box that has been, I guess it's been my desktop, but it's been, of course, for years. But it's been also the server, so it's, you could always map to a share on my Windows box if you want to watch a movie on your phone or a laptop. But I decided to move that off to another box, and so I did a purpose build with some cheap, slightly out of date hardware, but with all brand new NAS hard drives, and I'm set them up in ZFS, and because I thought that sounded cool from everything I've read, but so I'm learning as I go.
That's the best way to do it. Learning as you go is the best way to learn, in my opinion, next to teaching. Teaching is another way that is terrific for learning. As far as ZFS is concerned, it's rock solid. I really enjoy ZFS, and just a side note, the FreeBSD project is moving their ZFS implementation from the Solaris legacy implementation over to Linux ZFS, I read recently, so that's cool. How are you planning on sharing all these files with your devices? You said you got phones and laptops. Are you going to just mount some shares? Are you going to use something like Plex or something like that nature to stream it, or Kodi or whatever the flavor of the week in media streaming is?
I'm just doing shares right now. I've looked at the stuff, and I haven't got Kodi to run for me. I looked at Flex, but I haven't installed it, and I've installed Kodi like over and over and over, and it just crashes. I don't know. I've run it on a couple of different pieces of hardware, and I can't seem to get it to act right. Although, what happened to me, I can't seem to find online that other people have the same kind of problem. So I may be doing something wrong, but for some reason, it installs, and then I go in and start configuring it, and at some point, it just goes to hell on me.
That's been my experience as well. And I don't, if my memory serves me correctly, Kodi is not a server, but it's mostly just a local client. You install it on your media machine and you use that as a dedicated thing to watch your videos. You don't really share it unless you're doing DLNA, serving stuff up with DLNA. And if that's the case, I normally just use mini DLNA on the command line and call it good. I don't like to use Plex. I have a friend that works there, and everything seems fine, but it's I just don't like the proprietary nature of it, and I don't really trust the code, even though I know one of the developers. So I do the same. I just mount shares. I don't have a lot of media, but I typically do NFS mounts. Everything I've got's running Linux, and so NFS works well enough for that. Could probably do some Samba. And as far as sharing to my phone is concerned, again, I use mini DLNA for that, and just use a DLNA client on my phone. It's not as pretty as something like Plex, but anyway, I do not think your experiences are abnormal. I think that's kind of the way it is with Kodi. You got to get a machine that it works on and get it set up, and then just don't touch it.
Well, I use Linux for stuff that I can use Linux for, and I have Windows to fall back on for that. My wife uses only Windows. She has an iPhone, and I have an Android phone, so we have Okay, wait, we got one of everything. So I've got the Samba shares on here, and you can get it from the Windows box, and you can get it from Linux, and you can get it from the iPhone, and that's probably where we're going to leave it. Streaming is kind of cool and putting it on the TV, but right now, if we want to watch it on the TV, we take a laptop and set it next to the TV, plug in a cable to the receiver and just play it that way, right, you know, off of the server.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific way to go. Don't fix if it ain't broke.
I guess if we had a newer TV, we could stream it directly. You know, we could tell the TV to go look at the server, but we don't.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would work unless it had something like Plex built into the television. But all good points. With that, folks, I'm going to have to drop out here. I've got to get some lunch going. I'm going to hop back in here shortly. So probably be back in about an hour or so. I've tried to add some of our information here in our discussion to the Etherpad. Get a little bit more of that done. But with that, it's food time. Talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, great. Enjoy your lunch.
Everybody taking a break?
Hello?
Hello. How's it going?
Yeah, it seems that way.
Anything interesting going on?
Well, you could hear how it was going. What are you bringing to the table?
Right now, not much. I'm looking at this Dell Venue 11 Pro 10.8-inch 7130. Seems like an interesting device. User replaceable M.2 cards. I brought it up on a couple of different shows, and I was just debating on whether or not I wanted to get one.
What's a form factor? Just like a little
made in. Oh, it's a tablet.
Like a little netbook.
No, it's a tablet.
No
convertible
keyboard.
Tablet. Right. Well, you can put it in a keyboard dock, which has a battery in it, which is kind of cool. But no, the reason I'm looking at it is because you can easily put Linux on it. Here, let me post this link. You can easily put Linux on it and replace the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi module and have basically everything work perfectly.
What version of Linux would you put on it? The only thing that seems to work for a tablet is the old phone version.
No, I disagree. I have three tablets right now that are running Linux Mint. And they're doing it very well. I mean, the other Dell Venue that I have doesn't have the user-replaceable M.2, but so the Bluetooth doesn't work, but the Wi-Fi works just fine. None of the ones I have, the camera works, but everything else with tweaking. I mean, I had to write scripts for the screen rotation, except for on the T100 TA, works just fine.
Oh, that's interesting. I've tried several. I've got an HP 360 Ultrabook that you can fold back into a tablet mode, and the Linux things I tried, none of them were any good because the touchscreen stuff wasn't working. But I didn't try Mint.
Touchscreen has greatly improved at the kernel level through what's it called? From Ubuntu. So basically, all devices, well, most devices should work. I have had no success with some of the cheaper Chinese devices.
If I get around to putting 18.04 Ubuntu on my laptop, it may work in tablet mode then, huh?
Yeah. Like I said, touchscreens have come very far in the last couple of years.
Well, that's good to know. I never had touchscreen before, but once I got it and with Windows, like, it's kind of handy. And only not often, but occasionally you want to use it if you got it. And so it just hasn't worked for me with Linux.
Right. Now, a lot of devices will still have problems with suspend and resume. There are scripts that might help, might not, depending on the device. But just for overall usage, yeah, it's completely there.
And that's in the kernel, so I might get, so Ubuntu may work as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of write-ups about people using Fedora or Arch. I think the one I sense, let me go up to the top on this, because he talks about what he's using. Yeah, Fedora 25 and OpenSUSE Tumbleweed.
Well, you know, I like the low-end machines. Some people can't stand that they're slower than the high-end processors. You got to have an i7 or an i5 or something. And I had a netbook with a one-core Atom processor that I used for years and years. And it worked just fine. And when Windows would no longer work on it, I put Linux on it, and it kept working. And, okay, it just takes a little longer to do something, but it still did everything it was supposed to do. And that's kind of the way I am. So I think you might be, you know, that might not be a bad thing if you're kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, I used to swear by the Acer Aspire 1. I loved that netbook and that form factor. And that form factor kind of went away, that size, and the usability of it dropped off significantly when a lot of distros stopped making 32-bit operating systems. So in my search for something that was similar, I landed on the T100 TA, which is the ASUS Transformer, which does Linux pretty darn well. So
you can put a 64-bit on that one?
Yeah. You have to get creative because it's 32-bit EFI, but you can find write-ups on how to make a USB stick that does a 32-bit EFI and a 64-bit operating system.
Oh, I hate that stuff.
Yeah, it takes some work, especially, you know, the first couple of times you do it.
That's good to know. I knew that such things existed. My netbook had, you know, a straight 32-bit processor, so
right.
There wasn't any fooling around with it. But if you can do it, I'm willing to do stuff like that. The only problem I had with my netbook was the 10-inch screen was a little small. I'd probably go with a 12-inch now, although my laptop now is a 13-inch and it's just fine, and so I probably will never end up buying another low-end box because this one is small enough for most things, so
right.
I may never actually buy another small one, but I always really like that thing for vacations and for grabbing something to go and just having it with you, and you know, you'll go in McDonald's and sit down and get on the stock market, whatever you wanted to do, you know?
Well, my company that I work for has some interesting rules in regards to what you're allowed to bring into the office. You're allowed to bring in a tablet, but you're not allowed to bring in a laptop, a personal one anyway.
Oh, is it because they don't want you to connect to the network?
Something like that. It's I don't hook into their network anyway when I'm at work. I just tether my phone.
When I was working, we had rules like that, that you could anything you did bring in, if, you know, you'd have to bring it in, and we ran somebody would run some kind of stuff, and basically what they did, make sure you had virus software, but they still didn't let you hook it on the network. We had what we call the green network, which was Wi-Fi that was just basically the internet. It didn't let you hook on in local. It didn't let you connect internally. And I'm not sure what happened if you actually plugged an Ethernet cable in. I don't know if
it. Why chance it?
I don't know what happened. I don't know if we had a way to recognize it wasn't one of ours and reject it or not, or if we were just trusting that people wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, work does offer a Wi-Fi that you can access if you go through the process of setting up an account on it and everything, and it's separated from everything that work does. The thing was is they were blocking VPNs, and I wanted to use a VPN on everything that I was doing because I'm paranoid. But with that blocked, it was just easier for me to, instead of trying to get around it or using SSH forwarding for all my internet traffic, was just to tether my phone.
I'm okay with not using a VPN if I know the network and the guy who runs the firewall. And so I knew who that was, and I knew that she really took a good care of things. So I knew that I could run the Wi-Fi. I knew that the Wi-Fi was not Starbucks.
Right. Well, you know, it's not just that, but I was using the VPN. My dogs just went nuts. I was using the VPN to, you know, make it seem like I was on my home network so I could do some very specific things on my server, and I wasn't able to do that.
Ah, yes, of course. For that, though, you probably, like you say, you tether your phone, and then you're not on their network.
Right. No, but I think I still got a couple of the Spire ones sitting around because you were able to get them at a really reasonable price there for a while before everybody dropped 32-bit support. And I had gotten it for my kids because they needed Windows devices to be able to do things at school. And yeah, they aged. I think I still have maybe two of them that work, but I really enjoyed having them for years.
It sounds like you hang on to old hardware until it's probably doesn't make any sense, like I do.
Yeah, yeah. And I also like getting other hardware that other people have given up on and making it do tricks.
A while back, I wanted to build a router. So rather than do what you're supposed to do and go buy something, I call my brother and say, "Have you got like an old PC sitting around somewhere?" And he says, "You know, I think there's one up in the attic. Let me go look."
Grab a couple of NICs, put them in, and PF Sense, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I built a NAS recently, and I built it entirely around two sticks of RAM. I had 8 gigabytes of DDR3, and everything is DDR4 now. And so I go down to Micro Center and said, "Look, I got to have a motherboard that takes my memory, and a processor that fits that board. And I'm trying to spend no more than about $100." Right. And I got out of there for $110. And
that's cool.
And
I walk into stores and ask for motherboards that have DDR3, and they're like, "Yeah, we don't sell those anymore."
Oh no, this was the only one he had, and it was an open box return, and sitting on a clearance rack.
Right. No, I'm much more likely to hit up for old hardware. I'm much more likely to hit up something like Facebook Marketplace, and if I can't find it there, I'm probably going to go to eBay.
God, I don't buy much stuff over the internet, but if I can get, I live in Houston, and
I live in Dallas.
You could live in a big town. You can usually buy stuff in an actual store, and I try to do that.
Right. Well, the great thing about the Dallas area is there's to Goodwill for computer parts, so I will also go there for computer parts. And if I really wanted to, I could walk in and buy an entire working system for usually about what it's worth. But if it's an older system, then that's not too bad anyway.
Well, my NAS, I'm perfectly happy with this box. It's the processor. It's an AMD processor. It's the first one I've bought in years, and because that's what the motherboard was. You know, I couldn't tell you. It's okay. It's it says 8-core, and it's
okay. Phenom X2.
It's a 38 something maybe.
Okay, I was gonna go with the 48 series, but yeah, the 38 series is pretty good.
I kind of think it's 38. I think
3816.
I figure it's somewhere not too far off from an i5. I might be wrong, but it seems to be it's certainly plenty for a NAS and that I can make a VM off of it and run a router or something like that. I'm not going to do anything heavy duty with it. And my plan, if I need more memory, is I've got my experimental box that I use for VMs and for temporary bills to test stuff out. It's got 16 gigs of RAM in it, and if necessary, I'll take that 16 and I'll just swap the 8 for the 16 if I ever figure out that the NAS needs more than 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah. No, still a lot of devices running the DDR3.
A lot of stuff runs it, but you can't buy it brand new in the store anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
But all three of my boxes are DDR3. I've got my play box is a second generation i7. My real desktop is a fourth generation i7, and my NAS, which is my new box, has got a processor that's probably 4 years old. that's that AMD thing.
Cool. Now, you know what? I picked up some laptop RAM that was DDR3 at Micro Center, and that was recent.
Yeah, you can still buy the memory and stuff like that for it. It's just if you buy new motherboards, you're going to get it's all going to be DDR4 stuff. My laptop's about 3 years old, I guess. It's a sixth generation Intel.
Cool. See what generation mine is. GE726D. Not there. Chipsets, HM170, sixth gen Intel Core i7 processor.
Is that a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Okay, yours
is the MSI GE726QD, the Apache Pro.
Okay, same generation as mine then.
Yeah, I think it's like 3 years old, 4 years old, something like that.
That's about where mine is. I do a lot more with the desktop stuff than I do with the laptop. The laptop stays turned off most of the time, but that's what I'm using right now to talk on.
No, I have two laptops and a set-top box, and then I have my server for anything I need, you know, a bit more stability for. I mean, I call it a set-top box, but it's actually one of the Nook clones from Gigabit, the bricks.
Oh yeah, those are great for basically anything that you need a headless system for.
Well, I'm actually, I have it hooked up to a couple of TVs and I use it to access everything else.
I call that headless. TV is not a monitor.
Okay. Server runs headless. It's not connected to, you know, anything except the network.
I know, but when you connect things to a TV, you're using it for streaming and stuff, and that makes it a kind of an appliance rather than a general purpose computer. So that's in my brain. It's not saying anything about the ability of the computer. It's just saying, okay, this is the way it's used, and so it's headless in that you turn it on, bring it up, but it then runs as a streaming device for, oh, it looks like a monitor. No, it's not. It's a TV set. We're watching movies here.
Right.
My oldest box here is it's probably at least 20 years old. It's an ATX tower that has had countless, or at least uncounted, motherboards in it over the years. I've no idea how many times it's been upgraded. I don't know what the first, I don't remember if it was a 386 or a 486 that went in at first. It's had many hard drives. It's been upgraded one piece at a time over and over and over again. It had floppy disk at one time, you know. It's had a CD, and now it's got a CD DVD, and it's had as few as one hard drive, as many as six. Right now, it's got a single hard drive and DVD, and it's in the last few months, it's had an SSD and three or four hard drives. So it's, you know, just depends on what I'm doing with it. Sometimes it's a VMware server, and right now it's just a straight Linux box. It's got two versions of Linux dual boot on a single hard drive.
Cool. No, I think my tower is 7 years old. Somewhere in that range. I've had it for a long time now. I think some of the parts from it came from my previous build, which was also like 6 or 7 years old. How do you say that? Sviva?
That's what I was just wondering.
Is there savers in Texas?
Yeah, you see a couple of savers here and there.
That's where I get some of my hardware.
Well, there's one nearby here. I'm visiting family right now. And yes, I'm still in Texas. But no, they don't really have much of an electronics selection. Mongo, do you have any savers?
I'm not. What are you saying? What's savers?
Savers. Yeah, it's a resale.
No, not that I know of. We've got basically two places to get real computer stuff, which is Fry's and Micro Center.
No, yeah, those are not resellers.
Oh, then
like the Goodwill for computer parts.
The Goodwill here is a joke.
Okay.
And I don't know of any other.
No, if I'm looking for electronics, I'm probably not going to go to the Savers. But I will go to one of the two Goodwill for computer parts in the Dallas area and check those out. Or the a bunch of the different cities north of Dallas have community outreach places that do a lot of resale, and you can usually pick something up there for decent prices.
A couple of years ago, I talked to a guy, I think it was at a car club meeting, and who worked at he was, you know, a volunteer at the Goodwill computer thing, and he built computers for them, put Linux on them for them to sell, but I think they gave them away or something, because if you ever went to their store, they actually had nothing but junk. I guess it would be nice to be able to buy used stuff, but you know, where you could go and see somebody face to face and pick it out. But I've never actually been to a place like that. Now, I do have a closet in my house that's kind of like that.
Good evening.
Hello.
Oh, hello. You can hear me.
Hey. Yep.
Oh, fantastic. This is the first I've used the Mumble on iOS. I was trying to drag my name into the right channel. Could not find a way to do it, and then just brain farted, and I thought, you know what, if I double click on the thing, that might bring me in. Oh, and here I am.
You invented the double click.
Well, I thought about that, but somebody had beat me to it. Having said that, I'm sure there might be a pattern that I could write for that.
Well, it took me 20 minutes to get push to talk working.
Yeah, I'm usually, anytime I've been here before, oh, by the way, for people that don't know me, I don't know I turn up very often, 5150 knows me, so does Ken Fallon. You probably heard me on the chat before, like years ago, under the name Thistleweb. That's me. I've just sort of rebranded and changed all that kind of stuff. I don't really come here very often, but yeah, usual kind of annual appearance. I usually had it set up with push to talk, but this time round, I'm using iOS, and it was just a bit awkward. I could not figure out how to drag my name into the right thing. I could just, it's more intuitive. I'm just overthinking how to move around in iOS. That's all.
I imagine that was it. I certainly messed around with it for longer than it should have been. It should have taken me this morning.
A lot of the time, it's just it's easy in hindsight once you've figured it out, but yeah, and until you actually do the thing that you should have been doing all along, it's like yeah, I'll need to remember that.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.